Welcome and Happy New Year. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we are starting the new year on a hopeful note by speaking with three young environmental activists. In addition to raising awareness about the impacts of climate change, they are also creating innovative campaigns to fight climate change and big polluters by pushing UC Regents to divest from fossil fuels, turning weapons into shovels to plant trees, and creating healthy communities. Kaya Lemley was a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation and a youth delegate with Sustain U.S. to the U.N. Climate Talks in Bonn. He's also the founder and co-director of the Thrive Choir, an interfaith gospel choir for social and environmental justice, and the Thrive Street Choir, which is organizing hundreds of people to sing at marches and rallies across California and beyond. And Kyle joins us in studio. Hi, Kyle. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, Rose. Great to be here.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Daisy Romero. Daisy was a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation in Bonn, Germany. She's a member of the Local Governments for Sustainability. Daisy's activism began by leading bilingual workshops that cover topics such as composting, recycling, energy, and water conservation in the Jackson Triangle neighborhood of Hayward. It's part of a program called Unite to Green. Hi, Daisy. Thank you for coming in.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And Seth Alston is a Bay Area native and a third-year student at UC Santa Barbara, where he's majoring in environmental studies. For the past 2 years, Seth has organized around issues such as fossil fuel divestment and opposing the expansion of local oil and gas extraction. Hi, Seth. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Rose.
Well, it's great to have all of you as we start off the new year. We wanted to do something positive. And I want to ask all of you, 2017 was a tough year. I took a long break last month just because I needed to refresh and kind of disconnect for a while. But just in the last 2 weeks, the Trump administration got rid of an Obama requirement that would have required companies to let people know what chemicals they're using when they frack. He also got rid of a rule that was put in place after the Deepwater Horizon oil disaster. So 2017 was really hard, especially when you're talking about the environment. And I just want to ask all of you, when you look back at the year, how are you reflecting? And it wasn't all bad news. There were also a lot of victories. Let's start off with you, Kyle. What really stands out for you in 2017?
Well, 2017, I think, was just a year of awakening for so many of us in the U.S., and just awakening of for myself in terms of the surfacing of the injustices that are happening across our country. Trump is not doing anything new in America. His rise to power and his taking of the public conscience and all that he's done is just the repetition of an old cycle of greed, hatred, and delusion here in the U.S. And so after the initial shock of the election over a year ago, I think so many of us in our communities woke up to certain realities that we turned a blind eye to. Inequality, we couldn't look away anymore. Hatred for black and brown people, it was just super in our face with President Trump just making racist comments live and on social media all the time. And you know, with all of this deregulation that's happening, Trump pulling out of the Paris Agreement, selling America's public lands, drilling for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, all these just the complete destruction and desecration of our planet. America has been doing this for hundreds of years. We're built on colonized land taken from indigenous peoples here in the U.S. This history of violence and killing our planet and the people on it is not new. What's different in 2017 is that we're waking up and we can't stand it. We can't stand just the blatant verbal abuse we get from this administration every day of the week. And so I had a great year in 2017 because I was able to meet some incredible other organizers from all around the world and people who didn't previously identify as political or as organizers really stepped up their game in 2017 woke up and took to the streets, took to social media, and used their gifts to fight this administration and all of the gross injustices that we're seeing. So even my sister, who has never identified as an activist, and even makes fun of me for being an activist sometimes, even she went to the Women's March. And so you're seeing people like her all across the country just standing up to fight for what we believe, because we really have to in these times.
Daisy, what would you add to that?
Well, for me, 2017 was a year to step up, an opportunity for us to fight the injustices that was happening in our country at a local level, especially since we're not getting that from the government. So this year, we definitely had to step up. And the way I did that was through some projects that I've done in my community. For example, I worked with a nonprofit organization called Ecology Action, where we did door-to-door outreach to the industrial areas of Hayward, Daly City, and East Palo Alto. We provided them with water-efficient tools such as shower heads, faucet aerators, and we served approximately 2,000 homes. And that really made a difference and an impact in my community. So I think 2017 was definitely a year for community members to help each other and educate each other.
When we did a show about the actions you took at the climate change conference in Germany, you were telling us a little bit about the work that you do in Hayward.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us more about how you got that started, and what has the reaction of the community been to these workshops?
So for the workshops, that was with ICLEI, the Unite to Green, and it was partnered with Stop Waste as well. And what we tried to enforce was climate change issues, for example, energy efficiency, water conservation, waste reduction. And we did workshops in the communities that were mostly affected by pollution and other issues of climate change. And people were actually pretty responsive to it. They enjoyed learning and educating themselves. I also got to learn about a lot of communities that were affected by climate change that I had no idea that these things were happening to them. And it was a great opportunity for us to help them and provide them with tools.
Mm. And how did the community respond to the workshops?
They were pretty responsive. They liked to listen to what we had to say, and they were very interactive. They had a lot of questions, and that was good because then they could go to their family members and friends and educate them as well.
Seth, what about you? What stands out for you in 2017?
I think I'd have to agree that crisis is definitely a great motivator for change. In 2017 especially, it was a successful year for fossil fuel divestment. So at UC Santa Barbara, we had several hundred students participate in an action.
Sorry, Seth, there's something wrong with your mic, I think. Can you share that one and then we'll fix
it? How's this?
That's better.
Okay, 2017 was definitely an impactful year for us at UC Santa Barbara. So we had several hundred students participate in an action this past spring in favor of fossil fuel divestment, both organizing around the issue of the Dakota Access Pipeline and the fossil fuel investments in general. So we had some successes. There was about $150 million that was divested from the UC portfolio when it comes to coal and tar sands, as well as the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we got four UC chancellors to sign on to our message of full fossil fuel divestment.
Wow.
So,
That's huge. Can you talk a little bit more about fossil fuel divestment? Because we're hearing that more now, but I just want to make sure that everyone understands how that works and why it's important.
Okay, so the University of California has roughly $100 billion in total assets that it invests for things like pension funds and the retirement for its employees. About $3 billion of that is currently involved in fossil fuel extraction, exploration, refinement, transportation. And what we're calling for is investments in socially responsible ventures rather than in these companies that we all tie to these ideas of environmental degradation and injustice.
And the campaign to get the UC system to divest, that has been in the works for a long time. Can you talk about, give us a little background on that, and what do you think was most effective?
So what I think we're finally starting to see is that not just the student body in general, but members of staff and faculty are starting to sign on to our message. So in our action where we held a sit-in, we were occupying the administration building. We had a pretty positive response from every employee that was walking in the door, whether it be professors or administrators. It was a pretty positive atmosphere where not just students, but the rest of the university is agreeing with our message and really trying to be supportive. So I think that's the change that we're starting to see.
Mm. And the significance of fossil fuel divestment. I mean, when you have a powerhouse like the UC system saying that they're not going to invest in fossil fuels from here on out, that makes a major statement.
It does. If you look at the successful divestment campaigns that surrounded like Big Tobacco or apartheid South Africa, when you have these major funds starting to step away and say that, you know, we're revoking the, you know, social license to operate for these companies, we're taking a stand, it may not have a direct financial impact, but it starts to show that people are really going to put their money where they feel it's best served.
What is next for the fossil fuel divestment movement?
So what we're looking at now is trying to get support from the Board of Regents, the actual governing body of the UC, to pull the money out. So far, the chancellors that have signed on to support us don't actually have the say when it comes to where the money is actually being invested. So the regents have made a stance saying they don't want to politicize their investments. They don't see this as a positive for them, but it's starting to show that it's economically feasible, makes sense, and this is already a politicized investment. Leaving the money where it is making a statement that they disagree with the scientific consensus on climate change and the environmental justice issues that come from that.
What do you both think about the fossil fuel divestment movement? Because it really has exploded over the last couple of years. Daisy?
Well, I attend UC Berkeley. I didn't know that these movements were going on, so it's great that you're educating people, and now I know more. Mm-hmm. So every day I learn more and more about these issues.
Kyle?
Yeah, thank you so much, Seth, for doing that incredible work. Super inspired. And I went to Brown University a few years ago, so there wasn't an active divestment campaign really going on at that time. But then after I left, it really geared up, and we didn't get them to divest. The president of Brown made these statements, and they instead invested money in the environmental studies program. But they did not ultimately end up divesting. But I know that the students, current students at Brown, are going to keep fighting. And I think it's a really important, it's an incredibly important action to take, to take your money away from the polluters, from those damaging our environment. I think we all have divestment can happen on the individual level as well as the level of a university or even a company, a small mom and pop shop can divest from harmful chemicals, harmful practices on the earth. So I think really every one of us has an important role to play about where we put our money, because we're either funding with our money these corporate polluters, or we can fund regenerative practices and companies that are doing the right thing.
On today's Your Call, we are kicking off the new year by speaking with young environmental activists. Kyle Lemley was a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation and a youth delegate with Sustain U.S. to the UN Climate Talks in Bonn, Germany. He's founder and co-director of the Thrive Choir, an interfaith gospel choir for social and environmental justice. Daisy Romero was also a delegate in Germany. Her activism began by leading bilingual workshops that cover topics like recycling, energy, and water conservation in the Jackson Triangle neighborhood of Hayward. It's part of a program called Unite to Green. And Seth Alston is a Bay Area native and a third-year student at UC Santa Barbara, where he majors in environmental studies. He's organizing around fossil fuel divestment and also opposing the expansion of oil and gas extraction. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, we would love to hear from you. We are just seeing environmental activism really exploding, especially on college campuses across the country, but really young people are leading the way. So what questions or comments do you have for our guests? If you're an environmental activist, we'd love to hear from you, whether any generation really. So many older activists are learning from young activists, and we'd love to have a conversation around that. 866-798-8255. What stands out for you in 2017? What are you planning to do this year? 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. yourcall@kalw.org. You can also leave a comment on social media. Our Twitter account is @yourcallradio, and you can find the show at yourcallradio.org. Kyle and Daisy, we had you both on when you were in Germany, and we talked about the organization, the organizing you did there. There was a massive protest against the, I should say, during the only official United States panel, and on that panel were oil and gas executives. Now that you've had time to let all that sink in, I mean, it's really incredible because young people stopped that panel. You got up and you sang. But what was it like for you to just see how these conferences work, especially under a Trump administration where the only panel was people on that panel were oil and gas execs? Daisy, what was that experience like for you?
Well, I was humbled and honored to talk about my work with the city of Hayward and the grassroots effort at COP23. So I got to discuss, like, what I did in my communities and how that impacted them. So the U.S. People's Delegation was composed of just, you know, regular Americans that were serving in local justice. So that was definitely a great opportunity to connect with all of those people and also unite and say what we do in our communities to make an impact. So I had a great experience.
What about you, Kyle?
The conference was super inspiring for me. Just being in Germany at the UN with delegates from all around the world, both grassroots delegates in the from civil society across the world as well as international policymakers. Just, it was an incredible mix and conversation at all levels of the climate movement. But what was really interesting to see was that the U.S. was absent, really largely absent from the conference. There were more folks from the U.S. civil society than the U.S. government. In one of the main centers of the UN, there's pavilions from every single nation or major player around the world. Most of the European, major Asian and Latin American and African countries were there. But there was no U.S. Official pavilion there. And that was just on the first day walking around the UN campus, you could see just where is our country. We were absent. We just chose not to show up. The U.S. is pulling out of the Paris Agreement, which is which took my entire lifetime to create. It took years and years to get alignment from every nation around the world on this a binding policy to reduce emissions and keep global temperatures under 2 degrees and hopefully under 1.5 degrees Celsius, if we reach 1.5 and exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius, many small island nations around the world will drown. So this year's climate conference was hosted by Fiji. They were an incredible leader there because they have so much to lose that they really put everything they had into being a leader. And it was incredible seeing this tiny nation of Fiji show up in such a bigger way than the mega empire of the U.S., just choosing not to show up. It was a really immature response. It was offensive to many countries around the world and offensive to us, the civilians and people, the grassroots people in the U.S., that really we have to step into leadership in a time when our leaders are just throwing their hands up and saying, sorry, no, I'm not going to deal with that. I'd rather just make money for me and my family. Mm-hmm. So I was really inspired to be there with folks like Daisy, just standing up for everyday Americans, standing up for the majority of people around the world who are experiencing climate change. We here in the Bay Area, we're still recovering, and we will be recovering for a long time from the wildfires that destroyed thousands of homes, millions of dollars lost to fires in Northern California, just 60 miles north in Santa Rosa. The wine country was just decimated. And then, you know, just a month later, Southern California was just completely decimated by fires. Here in the Bay Area, we're still having spare the air days, and looking outside, the air pollution is just so thick. Mm-hmm. Southern California is very far away. It might as well be a different state here, but the winds have just blown the smoke and continue to just really ruin the air here. And talking about just air quality with folks experiencing asthma, I'm sure Daisy can talk a lot more about that. But we went to Bonn, we went to the UN with real climate impacts and real evidence that we are experiencing. This is not a a make-believe issue. President Trump talks about it as a Chinese hoax. Our Secretary of State is Rex Tillerson, who was the former CEO of ExxonMobil. And the representatives that the U.S. sent at the only panel that the White House hosted were coal representatives, nuclear power, and gas. These are not our leaders. These are folks making billions and billions of dollars from destroying our planet. So there was a lot at stake this year. There's a lot at stake going forward. But I was inspired by what we were able to achieve there, and more coming.
Daisy?
To add on, I was basically at COP23 to share my experiences with audiences perhaps unfamiliar with neighborhoods like mine. I wanted to give my community a voice. Even though the U.S. is out of the Paris Agreement, we still wanted to show our support through grassroots efforts. And one event that stood out to me was a town hall meeting in our little U.S. climate zone. And that consisted of local officials, you know, congressmen, people around those lines. And what we did was we asked them questions about what they're actually doing in their communities regarding climate change and what they're trying to do to combat these issues. And that was a great experience because they had to actually speak out and say what they were doing. Maybe not the government as a whole, but at least people in local cities are doing something to change.
Seth, you were not there, but what are your thoughts about young activists going to these conferences and having such a huge influence, especially right now?
Well, I think it's true that when people go to these conferences in order to convey the message that, you know, the average American citizen cares a lot more about these issues than our federal government at least tries to show. I think it's very good, especially for the image of California globally as a climate leader. It's a lot easier to be optimistic about these things when you live in the Bay Area and when you live in California, because you can see that there are concrete steps that are actually being taken to try to work around these issues. So I'm really thankful for people that actually get to step out and, you know, speak for the rest of us when we don't have a chance to be there ourselves and when our government doesn't really do a great job of representing us.
Well, before we go to break, we have time for one caller. Let's go to Anne in Oakland. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. It's wonderful the work these young people are doing. And I wanted to let people know about there are some very young, very effective activists in Oakland, high school and even middle school, very articulate people who've been working on the coal issue, the dirtiest fossil fuel. There's a coal company that has gotten a local developer to try to build a bulk coal terminal to ship coal from Utah to China. That's still Tagami. And a lot of community organizing went into stopping this. The city council banned it last year, and he has now taken the city to court. And actually, next Wednesday is a hearing for summary judgment in the case. And if that doesn't decide the case, then on the 16th, the trial will start. And so we're asking people actually to come out and show your support against the coal terminal in Oakland on Wednesday, January 10th, next week, at 8:30 in front of the federal building in San Francisco. That's 450 Golden Gate.
Anne, is the website to share nocoalinoakland.info?
That's right. Okay. And actually, there's a lot of great videos of the young people's like various activities and raps and speeches and stuff that people have done that are really creative.
All right, great. Well, thank you for that, and we'll put a link on our website right after the show. Thanks for calling in, Anne. And if you want to learn more about these actions and this lawsuit, what's happening in Oakland, the website is nocoalinoakland.info. Today on Your Call, we are kicking off the new year by speaking with young environmental activists. We're joined in studio by Kyle Lemley, Daisy Romero, and Seth Alston. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. Happy New Year. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are starting off the new year on a hopeful note by talking with three young environmental activists. Today, we're joined by Daisy Romero. She was a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation to COP23 in Bonn, Germany. Her activism began by leading bilingual workshops that cover topics like recycling, energy and water conservation in Hayward. We're also joined by Kyle Lemley. He was also at the UN Climate Talks in Germany. He's founder and co-director of the Thrive Choir, an interfaith gospel choir for social and environmental justice. Seth Alston is a Bay Area native, third-year student at UC Santa Barbara. He's majoring in environmental studies, and he's been organizing around fossil fuel divestment and opposing the expansion of local oil and gas extraction. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. If you're an environmental activist, what stood out for you last year, and what are you planning for 2018? 866-798-8255. And if there are any local actions happening right now and you'd like to talk about them, we'd love to hear about that. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. So let's talk a little bit about 2018. There's so much work to be done. It's hard to keep up with everything. I mean, that's a job on its own. We have a hard time doing that. But Daisy, what are you planning for 2018? What are you looking forward to?
Well, recently I started an internship with Waste Management, which is the local garbage company. Here I'm going to talk to multifamily properties such as, you know, apartment complexes and businesses to push towards waste reduction. We educate, you know, staff on composting, and we push towards sorting out our trash. And this goes towards the diversion goal that Waste Management has, which is zero waste by 2020. So I just want to work with the businesses and the homes, as well as continuing to talk to students. The other day, I actually did a workshop on water conservation at a local high school in Hayward. So I just want to empower community members to educate each other.
Why are you so passionate about recycling and waste management? Where did that come from?
I'm passionate about it because I do think that a lot of us don't value what we have. So some of us just throw away our food, and that's not okay. But an alternative for that is to compost it. So that's really important because it's, you know, you could reuse, reduce, recycle, rot.
Can we talk a little bit more about this? I wonder what young people think about waste and this hyper-capitalist consumer society that we're living in. I sometimes get press releases from Amazon Prime, and I think Amazon Prime is overnight shipping or free shipping or something like that. I know they now ship on Sundays, right? A lot of people say that their neighborhoods are full of these UPS trucks on Sunday. This is new. So this press release I got this morning said that in 2017, Amazon Prime delivered 5 billion packages. Billion. B. I mean, this is kind of shocking. And then I read in the Chronicle the other day that because so many people are now shopping online, there are about 1 million returns every day in the United States. So that is a ton of cardboard, which people can say, well, yeah, you can recycle it, but cities are completely overwhelmed by the cardboard in the boxes. And then you have all the plastic and the bubble wrap and everything else that comes with it. So can you talk a little bit about this? I mean, how do we get a hold of on this? Because it seems like it's just getting worse.
Right. It's always like a tiny item overpackaged in a huge box with a ton of plastic. And I think people are starting to realize that while there is that kind of instant gratification you get from the one-day shipping and you just click it and it's there in your house all of a sudden, there are consequences. The kind of consumption that we see in our country, you know, is not without its effects, whether it be in our backyard or around the world. And what I can see, at least among the student communities, the university students, people are starting to really think about their consumption habits. So maybe it's not showing in terms of Amazon's bottom line yet, but when it comes to things like meat consumption, for instance, people are changing the way they eat. People are changing the way they commute. So I think that this generation hopefully will be the one where we can see these become more mainstream lifestyle choices that, you know, will actually have a sizable impact.
Kyle?
Yeah, it's a really important issue, the issue of waste, which is a concept. It's a made-up word, really. Nothing is destroyed in the universe. It just changes form. So when we think about throwing things away and all of the externalities that go into making a product, you know, there's how much water is used in factories to actually make the item. And you mentioned the cardboard, the plastic, the bubble wrap. But of course, you know, here we are talking about fossil fuels and the shipping, how much fossil fuel is used on airplanes and in trucks taking these items back and forth to each other. And it's a tough one because we are completely indoctrinated in America to just consume. We are labeled consumers. Like, that's how we are identified by politicians, by companies, and even each other. Like, I'm a consumer of this, and we, you know, on social media, like, we are asked to do, like, even hashtags of the product just so that we can be more famous. And it's just a really strange cycle and part of our culture here in America that we are just consumers and that success means we are able to buy more things. And so it's really hard even to decolonize and just to take that out of my own mindset as someone who just goes to the store and, like, I have this cash and I can buy this thing. That's the ultimate freedom that I was given here as a, you know, born in the U.S. So I guess what I'm really trying to do personally, which is really a challenge, is to treat every object for what it actually is, which is a sum of many different parts. You know, holding up that cardboard, it's like you to actually, like, feel into, like, that it actually came from a tree, that it, how much, like, energy and water and fossil fuels went into that, how many hands actually touched that product before I'm just throwing it away. And then hopefully, like, if we can have that level of mindfulness and awareness with every single product that we hold, then we wouldn't make such violent choices. We wouldn't be making such harmful choices. I think that if people actually recognize that the harm they're inflicting on the planet and on people by buying these things, we wouldn't be doing that. And they're really trying to hide the level of impact. You know, they're trying to, and that's what you mentioned earlier with Trump, hiding, like, the chemicals that are used in fracking, because if people knew the truth about what they're consuming, they would make different choices. And so I think knowledge is power and remembering is power, remembering that we have power with our dollars and that we can withhold that and invest in regenerative projects that don't use terms of waste but use terms of regeneration.
Daisy?
So sorting out your trash might seem like a little thing, but it actually makes a huge impact and a difference. And I just want ordinary people to know about what they can do on a daily basis. So that does consist of sorting out your trash, composting, recycling, and, you know, just the regular landfill trash. And I hope that people realize that even though it's small, you could actually really make a difference. And it's important for the survival of our communities and future generations.
I just wanted to mention also my project Lead to Life, which is transforming weapons into shovels. And so it's a different take on this issue of waste and upcycling. But, you know, you take a gun, which is, you know, a lot more violent than a cardboard box. it's an artifact designed to kill. And so it's taking metal from deep inside the earth, and we are manipulating it and transforming it so that we can kill each other. Which is a very strange, you know, technology that we've been using for a while now. and so what me and my project partner, Bronte Velez, we both received the Spiritual Ecology Fellowship and got some funding to do a project that was in line with our values of interconnection and recognizing the cultural shift that's required in this time to catch up with the science of environmental desecration. And this is just one act that we can do to really embody the cultural revolution that's required. And so what we're doing is we're taking weapons, we're doing gun buyback days, and we are taking weapons that are decommissioned in police departments after they've been confiscated from folks, and instead of them destroying them, or what they often do is resell them in different states. We're taking them out of the system, and we're working with metal artists to transform them into shovels. And we're doing tree planting ceremonies at sites of violence in Oakland as well as in Atlanta with these shovels made from guns. And in April, we're partnering with the King Center, so with Dr. King's daughter to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination, which is this year. So that's a really amazing thing in 2018. We're 50 years later after King was assassinated. Obviously, the world was changed by this incredible person. And this is just one thing that we're doing to honor his life. And Dr. King, what's not often talked about, we often hear of his incredible civil rights leadership, but he was actually also a thought leader on ecology and the cosmology of connection as well. He was interested in nonviolence across the board. I think he had a famous quote about, why would I want to drink milk at a lunch counter if it's filled with GMOs? That wasn't the exact quote, but he didn't want to drink something that was filled with chemicals. And he recognized the violences that are coming at us from every angle. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we look forward to doing that different type of waste management and upcycling project, which is also alchemy.
It's an amazing project. It's leadtolife.org. What response have you received from community members in Oakland and Atlanta?
So we're just launching. Mm-hmm. So we haven't hit the ground running yet, but we've scheduled our first major launch in Atlanta in April and then in Oakland later on in the fall. But every time I talk about the project with someone, people get chills. That's just what they always tell us, which really speaks to something that's happening. If you're getting chills, that's kind of a response at the soul level that we really need, that something is striking a chord, and that people really actually want to see these weapons destroyed. And I know that there's probably many folks across the country that, you know, say that I could kill with a shovel if I wanted to, you know, so they're just have that violent response. But with the amount of gun violence that we're seeing across the country, you know, the last year we've had two of the largest mass shootings in history, mm-hmm. just in the last year. So this is a problem that we don't really know how to solve.
Yeah, we saw horrific gun violence just over the last couple of days in the United States. We'll definitely do a show with you when you launch this project because it's such an important topic. And again, that website's leadtolife.org. That is Kyle Lemley. He is involved in that incredible project. He's also director of the Thrive Choir and Interfaith Gospel Choir for Social and Environmental Justice. And he was a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation and a youth delegate with Sustain U.S. to the U.N. Climate Talks in Bonn. Daisy Romero was also at those talks. Her activism began by leading bilingual workshops, focusing on topics like recycling, energy, and water conservation in Hayward. And you're now interning with waste management in Hayward?
In Oakland. Yes.
Thank you. And Seth Alston is a Bay Area native, third-year student at UC Santa Barbara. And for the past couple of years, he has been involved in the fossil fuel divestment movement. He's also working on campaigns to oppose the expansion of oil and gas extraction. And today we're kicking off the new year by speaking with young environmental activists. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's hear from GS in San Leandro. Hi, GS. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for everything. Rose, right up front, I just say this is one of the most important shows I've ever heard you do. This is amazing.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I'm serious. This is like right on for the new year. We're turning a corner. Okay, three things. I see this in the context of the great sweep of human history. We're a young species. We're not like the turtles and tortoises who've been around for millions of years. Homo sapiens is a young species, and societally, we're just waking up in the last couple hundred thousand years. But right now, we're finally making the change from the early days of people kind of waking up. I mean, I'm a boomer. I used to drive cars around and do all that stuff. But living in Los Angeles, you know, the smog got really bad. Well, we had to do something about that, and on and on. But eventually, we get to this whole new incredible place where the young people, welcome to the future, folks. We're all in this together. You're getting it done. Mm. You're just taking it on. You're leaving the past behind, and you're forging a better way into the future. So God bless you all. Hang in there, keep up, and go for it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, GS. And we are definitely going to do a lot more of these shows this year. I mean, every time there's a new year, we always say, all right, how can we keep going and doing this and, you know, staying inspired? Because that's really important. Daisy, how do you stay inspired? I mean, what gets you getting up every day and doing this kind of work?
Well, I stay inspired because I'm actually affected by climate change. I have asthma, so it hits close to home. My neighborhood is affected by poor air quality, South Hayward. You know, we have a lot of resources that we don't have, a lack of resources, a lack of opportunities. So basically that drives me to seek opportunities that benefit my community and provide them with the resources that we don't have to sustain ourselves.
We're hearing so much more about environmental justice. Do you feel like you and your community members, what you're facing in Hayward, is part of the conversation now?
I think that since I went to Bonn, I have more of a response. For example, I'm now welcomed on talk shows such as this one. So I get the word out there a little more, as well as talking to departments in the city of Hayward, the Utilities Environmental Services Department in City Hall. I go to schools and I talk more about what I do and share my experiences with other people. So I definitely think it's getting a little more publicity.
How has this affected your family, the work that you're doing?
My family's proud of me. They're glad that I'm helping my community, of course. Mm-hmm.
And what about you, Kyle? Where do you find inspiration? What keeps you doing this work?
Nature itself. I think the resilience of nature just is always, nature's always doing her thing. She is growing and doing what she's always done, despite our efforts to completely desecrate her from the face of the earth. But I think in 2018, I hope to just go to the forest more, go to the ocean more, and just kind of be in silence more with Mother Nature, Mother Earth, because, you know, like our caller said, you know, humans are relatively new on the face of the planet. The planet has a lot of wisdom that's been generated over billions of years evolving. So all I can do is kind of just go back to nature, just kind of get out of the city, be able to see the stars, be actually able to feel the wind, and then I can remember actually what I'm trying to serve and what I really love about being a human.
What about you, Seth?
Well, Kyle definitely spoke to it. I love to, you know, get out into nature and have that as an opportunity to decompress and get away from the news and the social media and whatever other kind of toxicity surrounds us.
So important.
But I think a lot of my inspiration comes from the efforts that I see in local communities to make a difference. So in the Bay Area, cities are choosing to move towards renewable energy with community choice, aggregate energy providers. People are making the choice to drive electric cars rather than combustion. And I think that it's really, you know, positive. It looks like things are trending up, at least locally, in terms of people's response. And it's hard not to be inspired when you see other people making the changes that they need to be making.
Let's go to another caller. Let's hear from Joanna in Albany. Hi, Joanna. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much. Great show. Yeah, my question is about upcycling. You know, I've been recycling and composting forever and ever. And I try as much as I can not to throw anything in the garbage if I can, you know, reuse it or recycle it or whatever in some way. But sometimes it's hard to find places to upcycle things. Like, I have this old couch I want to get rid of and I don't want it to go into the landfill, or a flashlight that just doesn't work, you know. Stuff like that. Do you have any recommendations?
Daisy?
Well, for waste management, I don't believe that they service Albany, but they do have bulky pickup free twice a year. So that's definitely an option for, like, couches, TVs, things that are pretty big. And for e-waste, there are some places that do have, you know, free recycling. There's a place in Hayward. I'm not sure about Albany as much, but I know there are places if you just find them on the Internet.
There's also...
But can I ask you, those big pickups, because we do have that in Albany, does that stuff just go to the landfill, though?
I'm not exactly sure what they do with that, but I think sometimes they strip them for parts and they do things around those lines just to try to reuse it.
I think they try to reuse and recycle what they can.
Yeah, they do
for
what they can.
The big things. The other option is, I think, free cycle, right? So people who might want your couch, you can give it to someone. Mm. That's another option. I think you can find that online, free cycle. And if we find any other options or if we think of anything else, we'll put it on our website.
And yeah, that's great. If this couch is beyond, you know, like nobody's going to want this couch.
Oh, okay.
You know, kind of that situation.
Right. So I think at that point, the city will recycle and reuse what it can.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I hear you,
Thanks
though.
So much.
I think we need some radical imagination to really go into the upcycling. There's an amazing book called Cradle to Cradle, which is a foundational book written a number of years ago, but it really speaks to the heart of why we need to upcycle. And and I hope that our tech companies can really take this on instead of really championing these cultures of destruction and consumption. I really hope, you know, all these resources and smart minds, if we can put them to actually like using resources efficiently and not throwing things away, so that they could take your couch and make a, you know, a satellite out of it. That's the goal.
Daisy, you were talking about Albany versus Oakland. So every city has different programs, right? Mm-hmm. For example, San Francisco has a great program, composting. In fact, I want to do a show about this because now we can add certain plastics to our recycling bin, but there's a little confusion around that.
There is.
How can cities, if people live in cities that don't have good recycling programs, what can they do to pressure government officials to provide these programs?
So there are organizations such as Stop Waste. They also do workshops, and they teach people how to sort out their trash and other programs that they have. I think the website for that is ReadySetRecycle.org, and that also shows you like different resources of how to sort out your trash, you know, things like bulky pickup. But yeah, like you said, a lot of cities have different recycling, composting, and waste services. So I know that Waste Management serves Oakland, San Ramon, Hayward, Castro Valley, Oraloma, and I think Emeryville, yes. And then Republic Services is also another garbage company. I'm not sure exactly what they serve, but if you go on their website as well, they probably have some resources on where to find certain programs that you need, such as bulky pickup.
All right. Well, I hope that helped, Joanna. Thanks for calling in. We have an email from a listener who says, it's wonderful to hear from these activists. I'm a graduate student at UC Santa Barbara, where I teach undergrads as a TA. It's been inspiring to see how environmentalism and anti-racist politics come naturally to them. Most of these students come from California, and I wonder how much their politics is influenced by the regional culture versus how much of it is generational. Seth?
I would say that I'm totally influenced by growing up in California, especially the Bay Area. The communities where I was a child, you know, really informed my outlook now. But I think Santa Barbara is also a great place to go if you're looking for the kind of mindset, the forward thinking, you know, positivity towards environmental issues and environmental justice, especially.
What else is going on campuses that we might not be hearing about in the media?
Well, aside from divestment as a campaign, I think that there's just a general push towards carbon neutrality at the UC level. So we're looking at, you know, life cycle carbon for the entire university system. It's the biggest employer in California. And I think students are starting to realize that the money that they pay in tuition shouldn't necessarily be going into wasteful or, you know, unsustainable campuses and systems generally.
What are your thoughts on that question, Daisy?
So on UC Berkeley campus, I've noticed that we've pushed towards composting and recycling, sorting out our trash, basically. I know there's been a lot of movements around that.
The other question Joanna has is, have you had a chance to work with student activists from other regions? How are issues people are dealing with in other places different?
So fossil fuel divestment is something that's seen success, you know, various locales throughout the world. Stanford divested a couple of years ago. So when we look at students from other universities, it's really encouraging to have them say this worked, this didn't work for what we want to do moving forward. But I think it's also important to realize that a lot of the environmental justice issues aren't necessarily being faced on our campuses. So when we get a chance to work with indigenous activists, when it comes to something like the Dakota Access Pipeline, it really puts it into perspective that there are people literally putting their lives on the line for these kind of issues, and that's a great source of inspiration as well.
How did that affect all of you, that movement, ongoing movement? Kyle?
It's incredible to work with indigenous elders and to have them leading this movement for climate justice, both here in the U.S. and abroad. when we led our action at the COP, when we walked out of the U.S., the White House panel on how fossil fuels are should be the technology for climate mitigation, which is what they were espousing. We left the room, and the Indigenous Environmental Network hosted the rally. And it was just a really powerful statement that we were handing the mic back to the Indigenous elders, to who are the original stewards of this land that they call Turtle Island before the United States came to colonize. And we really need to give the mic back constantly to them all the time, and hear what they have to say, because they've been fighting environmental destruction of their land for hundreds and hundreds of years, whether it's the buffalo or genocide or the rivers and now the air. So much fossil fuels are being mined on Indigenous lands, and even here in the Bay Area, in Richmond, we're importing Amazonian crude oil. And so it's something that we hope that Jerry Brown will listen to Indigenous peoples here in California and also in the Amazon about what's actually going on, and that we'll actually stop importing Amazonian crude oil that's destroying Indigenous communities in South America as well as here in North America.
Well, it's been great to have all of you on. Thank you for kicking off 2018 with us. And to everyone who appreciated today's show, especially talking to young environmental activists, we are going to continue our Monday One Planet series, where we talk about these issues every Monday because it is so important. Kaya Lemley, Daisy Romero, and Seth Alston, thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. And before we end today's show, I want to thank Renee Kemp for filling in last month while I was taking a much-needed break. And I also want to congratulate the Your Call team for winning the Nation Magazine's Most Valuable Local Radio Show Award. Huge congratulations and thanks to Matt Martin, Malihe Razazan, Laura Flynn, Ali Budner, and Lauren Schechter. Your Call is produced here at KALW. If you'd like to listen to our podcast, you can sign up at yourcallradio.org. You can also find us on iTunes, where you can give us a review. You can follow us on Twitter at Your Call Radio and email show ideas to yourcall@KALW.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show and Kevin Vance for running the board. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.